WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yes, welcome to another Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi, and it is... We're coming to the end of another holiday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's kind of ironic. It's going on nearly 50 years since the good doctor was assassinated in Memphis. And we are going to have a conversation this evening in regards to how things are going in regards to civil rights, racism. I'll tell you more in a moment. We'll, of course, start out the program checking traffic. That'll come up in just a couple of moments here. But then when we come back, we are going to speak with an educator. That's what Dr. King was. He was an educator, other than being a minister. He was an educator. And we'll speak with Kathy Smith, Brockton Public School System. Chat with her about some things that are going on in the city of Brockton in regards to education. At 6:40, it's kind of out of order, but I kind of think I felt it was prevalent. Good friend Jerry Thornton, who writes for Barstool Sports, also has a very popular podcast on iTunes called Laces Out. So we'll speak with Jerry about the state of the New England Patriots. Tried getting him in last week. Unfortunately, Jerry was a little bit busy. Want to kind of get his take on the cracks in the foundation of the New England Patriots, that trio of Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, you know them, because they had the big victory this weekend against the Titans, and now they're taking on the Jaguars. We'll talk with Jerry about that. Second hour. This is where you can get involved a little bit in the second hour. We're going to speak with Kenyatta Savage. Kenyatta Savage... Just a couple of weeks ago, the Boston Globe, their Spotlight investigative team, did a very special series about racism in the Boston area. What is it? Is Boston more racist? Is this city more racist than other cities around America? So happens, Kenyatta is a friend of mine, friend of a friend, and I see Kenyatta all the time. Well, Kenyatta happened to be... A photo was taken of him while he was enjoying a Boston Red Sox game. Actually, it was the Boston Red Sox versus the New York Yankees. He so happened to be wearing a Los Angeles Dodgers hat, but that's not why they took the picture of him. He was one of a few, and the picture that you see, it's there's a sea of white faces, and Kenyatta was the only African-American that was in that picture. They also did a story on Kenyatta, getting his take about being the guy who was in that picture and his take on what the culture is like these days when it comes to racism. So we're going to have him in studio and Bishop Tony Branch. We've had Tony here before. We've chatted with Tony about diversity, the importance of diversity. He'll be here. We'll chat with him. And then we have members from the band Mountain Weekend. Scott Bradley, Dave O'Neill, Dave Brown. Talk a little bit about the band and share a little bit of their music. So that's all. It's all coming up in just a couple of moments here on 95.9 WATD. So we slowly cruise into the WATD traffic center because it's very slippery out there. Being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at Brennan Smoke Shop, M A Wareham.com with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now in Pope's Island, New Bedford. And telling us about how the roadways are on this holiday Monday is Nancy Shack.
Thank you, Kevin. It's getting better, actually, out there now. The expressway southbound, it's been a mess all afternoon. Now it's just a little bit slow passing from South Bay. It's okay the farther south you go. Northbound, it's been pretty good all afternoon. 3 southbound, there's nothing in your way now down past Route 53, so that's good news. 128 is good from Newton to Braintree, and on the Cape, both the Bourne Bridge and the Sagamore Bridge are clear sailing. This report is brought to you by Unbound.org. We all got to where we are through hard work and a little help. Open a world of opportunity. Opportunity for a child or elder dreaming of a better tomorrow at unbound.org. Get traffic on the nines every single morning. I'm Nancy Shack in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. Many years ago, I became a boxer at South Shore Boxing Club in Whitman. I didn't know then, but I know now how instrumental boxing was in shaping who I am today. I'm proud to come from a long line of successful fighters raised on the South Shore. The latest of which is a young man known as Mike Badman O'Hinn Jr. From Holbrook. He's had a very successful amateur career competing nationally as well as internationally and is now headed for his 5th professional win. Friday night, January 26th, Melrose Memorial Hall. For tickets, contact South Shore Boxing Club at 781-252-0328. 781-252-0328. Brennan Smoke Shop is a proud sponsor of South Shore Boxing Club and Mike Badman O'Hinn Jr. From Holbrook, Brennan Smoke Shop, the freshest smoke shop in Massachusetts. Yeah, you could say I've been hit a few times.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And we return for our first segment of this Martin Luther King Jr.
He is heading up the parents' board in bringing, we're going to be held together in forum, having a community, getting parents' eyes, where we get all of these ideas on as we start topics at these policies, to take a look at the school communities as unity. Policy, in any good input you get, the more buy-in from the and the more sub-community have when it comes to what we will have these policies to enforcing the system in a school system.
That the idea, it's fantastic, the parents having, leading the lesson and conversation up with maybe coming ways to...
Hi, this is Ed Perry from WATD, and a couple of months ago, I decided it was time to fix up my office. Well, one of the problems was that the blinds I have in my office were put in about 30 years ago when we built the building, and they were kind of scruffy. Actually, kind of scruffy is an understatement. So I called up Bob Smaldone of Budget Blinds and said, hey, Bob, what can you do for me to make my office look better? He came in and he put in a brand new set of blinds that keeps the sun out of my eyes when I'm trying to figure out how to keep the radio station running, and I don't even have to reach up and grab the blinds. It works on a remote control that sits on my desk. All I got to do is push a button. Thank you, Bob.
See the many different styles and products online at budgetblinds.com or call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-88-BUDGET. That's 1-888-88-BUDGET.
Dad, you know I'm willing to drive.
Honey, we're all set here.
But your eyes, you even say so yourself, don't like driving at night.
Well, that's why I'm following the plow.
But that's a sander, Dad. You know what they say.
It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
Oh!
Too late.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Got cabin fever? I'm Adrian Rolls, market manager of the South Shore Winter Farmers and Artisans Market. This market will be the first and last Saturdays between January 27th and April 7th. Located at St. Luke's Church at 465 First Parish Road, Scituate, just off of Route 3A, from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. With over 35 farmers, artisans, and even live music, any fresher, you'll be picking the feathers yourself. Once again, the first and last Saturdays from January 27th to April 7th.
Hello, I'm Ann, and I want to invite you to the Brockton Public Library. We are all Americans now. With the American Dialogue Immigration Series, Women and Law, with moderator Ms. Jimenez. This free event will take place on Tuesday evening, January 23rd, at the Brockton Main Library, 304 Main Street in Brockton. For more information, visit us at brocktonpubliclibrary.org. Thank you. I'm Ann from Brockton. The Greater Brockton branch of the NAACP will celebrate their 32nd annual Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Breakfast on Saturday, January 20th, beginning at 9 a.m. at Lombardo's in Randolph, Mass. Tickets are available, $40 for adults and $20 for children, by contacting 508-944-8212. Join us to celebrate a life that changed many.
The Cape Cod 5-Cent Savings Bank presents their fourth annual Life's a Beach, Saturday, January 27th, at Dino's Sports Bar in Mashpee. The night is to raise funds for the ALS Family Charitable Foundation and features live music from Cape Cod's favorite summertime party band, the Baja Brothers, plus raffles and appetizer buffet, signature cocktails, plus best beach attire and limbo contests. For more information, visit CapeCod5.com or call 508-247-1885.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And we return for our first segment of this Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, the celebration. And what a better way to start off the program than to have an educator. We have joining us Brockton Superintendent of Schools. Dr. Kathleen Smith is joining us. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me.
And, you know, it's. I hope you don't mind serving in the role of an educator as we, you know, we celebrate an educator.
Well, you know, I've always been very proud of that role, and when I talk to people after 41 years in the Brockton Public Schools, being superintendent, I always reflect upon how important it was, you know, to be a teacher in that classroom and to work with students directly each and every day. And I can honestly tell you there's not a day that I don't miss being able to do that. And some of my best days as superintendent is when I'm able to get into the classrooms and see the wonderful things happening with our educators and students and families.
You're a very active superintendent. You're someone who really embraces what it is that you're trying to, what you're trying to do, educating the students in the Brockton area. And I know that you're also somebody who has regular conversations. This Wednesday, a superintendent community outreach forum. This is something that you try to hit each corner of the city. This is going to be taking place in the East Middle School from 6 to 8 p.m. Again, this Wednesday, January 17th. And it seems to me that you have a long list of subjects that you're going to look to at least hold a conversation with the parents and those in attendance.
Well, you know, I found this out my first year as superintendent, coming on as any new superintendent would, even having been in the district for so long. It was an opportunity to get out into the community and to talk to the parents, to community members, to elected officials, you know, about how important it is for them to have a voice and for a superintendent to understand what the deep concerns are in any community when you're educating certainly large numbers of students. You know, us in Brockton having a population of over 17,000, a very diverse community. So in doing these forums back then, it was something that I have kept ongoing for the 5 years as superintendent. I actually find it very powerful. We're out there for 2 hours. I usually give an overview of some of the topics and the priorities happening in the district, and then we open it up for questions. And again, parents are are very articulate. They come certainly with questions, and they would like answers. We try to do as much of a follow-up as we can, either in addressing some of these issues with our school committee, mayor, city council, business people, wherever the questions come from. So I find this, again, very powerful, and always to hear the voice of the parents in our community allows us to be the best educators we can.
And with your permission, I'd like to tick off some of the varied subjects that you may touch upon or discuss.
Sure.
Okay, so state funding formula, the budget, that's usually a big one, equity in education lawsuit, advocacy, staffing levels and class sizes, kindergarten age rollback this year, potential Prop 2.5 override, and then usually any questions or concerns that you may hear from parents or community members.
That is correct.
Okay. If you will, if you want to kind of take it one by one, knowing that the past 2 years, it has been difficult when we talk about the budget, knowing that there's been a growing deficit that you and your staff and the Brockton school system and the city of Brockton attempt to close that gap. And it was a sizable gap this year. I don't know where it stands at this moment, what you're seeing for early numbers, whether you've received any cherry sheets from the state. Kind of talk about the budget as a whole.
Yes. Well, you know, in talking about the budget, I think we certainly, the past few years, have had a lot of difficulty in putting forward, as I said, the best education that we can based on the budget that we have had. And part of that is, when you really look back, and I have to address it, is the state budget formula.
Right.
Back as a first-year superintendent,
yep,
there were hearings held all over the state that talked about the foundation budget formula. And in fact, the formula is broken. It's been broken for a number of years. Our state politicians are aware of that. Our governor is aware of that. I believe we have certainly communicated to our constituency here in Brockton that it is a broken formula with many suggestions as to how to fix it. I believe on the governor's desk is recommendations, and maybe not all the recommendations would be implemented at once, but certainly a number of those would support additional funding for the Brockton public school budget. Some of it is additional funding for our special needs populations. Mm. Some of it is additional money for poverty. Some of it is additional money for, in which we have, a large bilingual student population. So, again, I spent time this summer with Aldo Petronio, our chief budget officer, the support of the mayor, our city council and school committee, to continue advocacy at the state house level and to actually respond at a hearing, a public hearing held by the Joint Ways and Means on Education in discussing the governor actually putting forward, you know, some of these recommendations. So, Kevin, as it stands right now, I say that because none of that has happened. We're probably days away or maybe at least a week or two away from the governor putting out the initial governor's
right
budget. We'll look at the inflation factor, which clearly affects all districts. So, again, the advocacy has continued and will continue as we look at this budget and some concerns I already have, and that is not acting on the recommendations of the Foundation Budget Review Commission.
I've had many conversations with you over the past couple of years in regards to the Ed Reform Act of 1993, equity in education, making sure that Brockton and other communities that are like Brockton get the funding that is needed, that's important, and that this isn't necessarily just Brockton versus the state, but that there are many suitors. Kind of talk to us in regards to equity in education and the lawsuit. I know you can only, you know, on a limited basis, talk about it, but give your take on it.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting, and I think the public should know that this is the 25th anniversary coming up in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
The law was passed in 1993 and clearly made a difference for urban centers and suburban centers of education. And it certainly made a difference in Brockton, from kids sitting on radiators, not having seats in classrooms, not having appropriate curriculum, not having the money to properly fund an education budget. And what you saw was a place like Brockton and Brockton High School certainly become a level one school, you know, students attending, you know, universities, prestigious universities all over our country, you know, businesses succeeding because of the type of kids that we were able to educate and make sure that they were able to continue their education. So I think it's fitting when you talk about a 25th year anniversary, and our state right now, our Department of Education at the state level, is putting forward something called Leading the Nation, because they want everybody to know that it has made a difference in these 25 years. So I am willing to stand with the state, and Brockton, of course, had the lead plaintiff at the time, which was a young girl sitting in classes in Brockton. Her father was a school committee man at the time, Scott McDuffie, Jamie McDuffie. Her name is now Jamie Milnemo. Mm-hmm. And she is actually a teacher in the Brockton Public Schools all these years later. And the reason that I bring that up is when you talk about 25 years later, while I am proud of what the state has done, as I said earlier, it is now a broken formula and something that we need to focus on. And while the state is not willing, in a timely manner, to make those recommendations, we have to do something. And hence that is, again, the discussion of an equity in education lawsuit like happened many, many years ago. So we are out there working with our parents and community. We are discussing lead plaintiffs if we go forward with this lawsuit. We're talking to not only other urban gateway cities, but also some suburban cities that are right there with us, hand in hand, you know, talking to our state. If we are so proud of leading the nation, we need to make sure that that opportunity is there for every child in every part of this state. So we are, advocating that if the state is not paying attention to the recommendations, then we will have to go through the courts and, again, file an equity in education lawsuit. And I believe we're very close.
Again, we are speaking with the Brockton School Superintendent, Kathy Smith. She's joining us here on this holiday to chat a little bit about an upcoming forum. This Wednesday, it's the superintendent's forum. She gives her an opportunity. It's basically a community outreach to speak with residents, kind of get an idea. She does it on a regular basis. And again, it'll be this Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. And we're kind of discussing some of the topics, some of the subject matter that could be discussed that she'll go over and look at. Now, you look, and until something is done, there's some kind of movement with the lawsuit. In the meantime, there's been discussion about a potential Prop 2.5 override, and we look at if something isn't done funding-wise, it could have ramifications in regards to staffing levels and class sizes. Could you touch upon those?
I will, and you've heard me certainly talk about the support that Brockton needs from the state according to the formula. The other part of that is, you know, time is of the essence here, and I'm sure all of my educator friends out there and families know that we are right now changing with a new high-stakes test coming within a year all over the state. It's called MCAS 2.0. It's already begun at the lower levels, where our students are required to take the high-stakes testing online to receive their high school credential, their diploma. And when you talk about a Prop 2.5 override, the way I envision it in the city of Brockton is we don't have time to wait for an equity in education lawsuit when we're talking about competing with children all over the state. Many times students have one-to-one devices in their schools. They go home to two and three devices in their homes. That's not always the case in an urban center. So while we are trying to make sure that our classrooms are fitted with you know, one-to-one devices for our students, technology, instructional technology for our teachers to be using on a regular basis, we are going to have to look as a community when you talk about 1 year away. These students must take this test online in order to receive that credential. So I believe it will be about technology. It will be about resourcing our schools and making sure that our children are able to compete with children all over the state and all over this country.
And, you know, another thing, another topic that you'll, I guess, go over is advocacy. What are some of the things that you are topics, when you talk about advocacy, what are some of the things that could be done to help with the situation in the Brockton Public School System?
I think advocacy in Brockton, I remember going back 2 years ago, I was actually sitting with a group of principals, and we were very frustrated, obviously, with the things you and I have just talked about, you know, the budget, the state level, proper funding from our city for education for our students. And one of the principals coined the phrase, we were trying to come up with a way to connect to the community. And it was actually Principal Brian Rogan from our Kennedy School. And he said to me, you know what, Kathy, I really like the term, how about Brockton Kids Count? And at that time, it was students that we had lost from a count on economically disadvantaged students and additional money that comes from the state to support those students. And at the time, we lost millions of dollars, close to $6 million, because of students they were not counting because of a new way of counting students. And that was a fitting advocacy. It actually brought the community together, and it wasn't just about the counting of students, but it allowed us to have that dialogue with parents about what they want for their children's future. And if you know the makeup of the city of Brockton, it has changed in the past 25 years. We have a very diverse community, many, many languages spoken, rich in cultures from all over the world, and we're very, very proud of this. But we have to, again, make sure that we're out there connecting, and we've had great help from our bilingual department and interpreters. And I am so proud when I go out there with advocacy that we are educating our parents so that they can make sure that if they're new citizens to this country, they're registering to vote, and they're out there voicing their concerns about making sure that our children and our community, you know, get what they justly deserve in order to be productive members, you know, of our society, our country, and our community. So advocacy has been very much at a grassroots level all the way up to the State House, and certainly you and I have talked beyond that.
Absolutely. And again, just a reminder, these are, you know, we're not going to dig in any deeper, because the idea is we want you to attend these community outreach forums and hear some of the things that the superintendent and her team and the Brockton Public School System, what they're working on, and also want to hear from you. So it's important for you to be in attendance this Wednesday at the East Middle School from 6 to 8 p.m. Bring your questions. And bring your ears and be ready to participate in this. One last thing that we want to kind of discuss a little bit, Superintendent, is about something called the World Cafe. I believe this is something that the Brockton Public School System is hosting, and this is something taking place on the 24th of January at the high school in the Red Cafeteria called World Cafe. What is this?
Well, this is something that came about with what we call a district capacity project. It brings together your superintendent and administration. It brings together a school committee representation, and it brings together our Brockton Education Association, which is our teachers' union. And the reason I say that is one of the things we got together to discuss over a year ago was looking at updating many of our handbook policies and getting actually input from the community. So we've started out with a task force of probably about 20 staff members, teachers, administration, school committee, talking about what we need to look at, and we came up with looking at dress codes. We're looking at the idea of cell phone use. We're looking at the idea of social media. We're looking at the idea of bullying and its effect in the schools. And we have had a survey out there for about a month. I believe the survey is open until the 19th of January. It is online at brocktonpublicschools.com. Parents are, or the community is invited to go on and take the survey and give us your thoughts. We have certainly over 1,000 people I know at this point that have responded. And what we're doing on the 24th is we're inviting our parents and community members to join us from, I believe, it's 6 to 7:30 in the Red Caf at Brockton High School. And we're going to be having discussions run by parents. So we've had parents that have volunteered this past week. They've had some training with our Chief Officer of Student Support Services, Sharon Wolder. And she is heading up a lot of this effort in bringing the parents together. And we're going to be having a community forum where we're getting parents' ideas on all of these topics as we start to take a look at these policies as a school community. And as in any good policy, the more input you get and the more buy-in from the community, the more support we will have when it comes to enforcing these policies in a school system.
And I think it's fantastic that the idea is having the parents leading the conversation and maybe coming up with some ways to help deal with these. You think back when you and I were getting our education in grade school and in college, that cell phones and social media were not things that were that a school system had to worry about tackling in issues where you had to worry about cyberbullying and you had to worry about the use of cell phones, whether it's in classes or on school property. It's definitely interesting, and it's nice to see at least parents are going to be a part of this and helping. So at least there's a connection between the school system and the parents and the community.
Well, innovation is wonderful. Technology is wonderful. You know, things that, again, I use today obviously were never heard of. Sometimes I think back about those days when I attended high school, knowing the situations that we deal with on a day in and day out basis in Brockton. So the world has changed. Our policies have to be updated. But again, there are good uses of all the things that we just talked about. And there are uses that have consequences in schools. So, again, I do believe at the end of this forum, we will have an opportunity to go back to our task force, make some recommendations, and really start to address this in our handbooks from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade.
Superintendent, I want to thank you very much for joining us this evening, especially on the holiday. Anything you want to say in closing before we say goodbye?
No, I just would like to close by, you know, wishing everybody, again, a wonderful Martin Luther King Day. It's a wonderful celebration, and we will continue to do the very best we can for the children, not only in the Brockton community, but hopefully in Metro South as these kids go on to college and career and benefit all of us.
This is Brockton Superintendent Schools, Kathleen Smith, who has been our guest here, at least kicking off the program. We will step aside for a moment, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Dad, you know I'm willing to drive.
Honey, we're all set here.
But your eyes, you even say so yourself, don't like driving at night.
Well, that's why I'm following the plow.
But that's a sander, Dad. You know what they say.
It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
Oh.
Too late.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, your Martin Luther King Jr. Day edition. And we're going from educators. We had Kathy Smith on from the Brockton Public School System, to a sports prognosticator and an author, Mr. Jerry Thornton, a good friend of the radio program. Sir, how are you?
Good, man. And you're going from an educator to the uneducated in one fell swoop. You really should have taken someone with, like, a moderate amount of education to buffer between us, you know, because it's like coming up too fast from deep sea diving. Like, listeners might get the bends listening to an intelligent person and going straight to me.
Really?
Yeah,
that's an excellent analogy. But see, what I wanted actually was the guy who is, he's kind of a Bruce Wayne-esque guy where in his own little bat cave, he creates magic. Again, someone from Barstool Sports, all the stuff that you're doing, you got the new, it's not really new, the Laces Out podcast, which is wildly popular.
Thank you. Available on iTunes and Google Play and on Barstool Sports as well.
Yeah, you're right up there. Everywhere. You're like number one, number two, you're somewhere up there?
Yeah, we're consistently in the top 10 of all sports podcasts, like nationwide, which is great, great day. I'm on with national treasure and former Colts punter Pat McAfee, who retired on live television to come to Barstool full-time during the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah.
And A.J. Hawk, like Super Bowl champion A.J. Hawk of the Green Bay Packers. And it's great. So, again, there's two guys who have played in the league, who understand the league, who know football from all different angles, plus me. It's weird, man. Like, but, you're right. That's total Bruce Wayne life.
But you know your stuff, and I kind of likened you to, and please forgive me if you don't like this analogy, but when you describe stuff or when you give an analogy, you're almost on the cusp of Dennis Miller when he did Monday Night Football. Remember those days? Yes. When he would sit in? Although, actually, people get what you're saying when you give an analogy. Sometimes when Dennis would give an analogy, people go, what?
Kevin, I don't know if you just saw my facial reaction. My eyebrows go up. That's because I'm stunned by the compliment. I love Dennis Miller,
and I
am on an island in saying that I really like them on Monday Night Football. I will never forget their first game, the Hall of Fame game. So it's at Canton, Ohio. And he opened up by saying, it's great to be here in the Tigris and the Euphrates of football. And I'm like, this is fantastic. And like, they were talking about Dick Vermeil, who cried a lot. And he said, Dick Vermeil cries more than Sylvia Plath being pepper sprayed. And I'm like, I don't know who that is. And I ran to the Googles. And
Google is your friend.
Yeah, she was a poet who took her life. Sorry she took her life, but that is a great line. And I love guys who do that, who challenge you.
Sometimes there's depth to their comedy. It isn't just surface stuff. There's something behind it. There's a premise.
Well, I'm not trying to be Dennis Miller, and I couldn't be, but by God, just I will take the veiled comparison.
Run
to
with
him.
That. Well, I thought it was interesting to have you in, knowing that you are someone who follows the Patriots. You did a book about the Patriots. You're probably on the cusp of another book that we're probably going to end up talking about somewhere down the road in 2018 here. But From Darkness to Dynasty.
Thank you.
First 40 years of the New England Patriots. For all I know, you're writing the second chapter of that book.
Pretty much. Like, I just thought that the Patriots story has never been told. I wanted someone to write that book, and the universe was taking its sweet time. So I said, okay, I'll jump on it because it's fascinating to understand just how bad they were for how long, how amateurish they were, how terrible they were on the field and a laughingstock off the field. And then the moments where they actually had some success, it immediately came crashing down around. Sure. The Jenga tower would just collapse all over the table within seconds of them being successful. And I wrote it, partly for the people who lived through some of it, but mostly for the guys around today who think that Lombardi trophies just sprout up out of the ground like summer corn, it's just one duck boat parade after another. I have a 22-year-old son that just turned 22 overseas in Okinawa, who, when I was his age, the Patriots had been in 3 playoff games of my life and lost them all.
Yeah, they sucked.
Yeah, and one of them, it doesn't even count because it was like a strike year. So, like, this kid is seeing them. They're now one game away from his 8th Super Bowl of just his lifetime.
Right.
And so I want people to just appreciate it. And I'm like that old guy who grew up in the Depression. And even though things are good now, I still need to save tinfoil and Harking string because you never know what's going to happen or whatever.
It.
Right. And it's my way of enjoying this dynastic run to the fullest extent.
Well, I wanted to have you in last week, but you're a busy guy, and I'm appreciative that we're having you on this evening. But last week, prior to this past weekend's victory over the Tennessee Titans, there was this article that was published that there are cracks in the foundation of that dynasty of, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and Robert Kraft. And I wanted to kind of get your take on it, because it was the thing that was beaten to death by the two sports titans in town in Boston, in the conversations, and people, of course, searching. And, you got Jimmy Garoppolo, who is doing wonders with the 49ers. People going, scratching their head, going, why did they trade him? And who'll get why they traded him? And it's been dissected. And I want to kind of get your take on it, and also get your take on this run, which is a very interesting run. So we'll start with the first. Give me your thought when you read the article and you hear the news. Was this just another Deflategate, attempt to restart the Deflategate steam calliope by the ESPN to try to get that noise up in the background? Hopefully this will distract the Patriots and let another team into the big game in February.
In two words, nothing burger. There is nothing here. There's nothing based in fact. It's, oh my gosh, there's been some tension. Really? Imagine that.
Well, 18 years. We'll get another happen.
Imagine three super successful people. And by that, of course, I'm talking about Mr. Kraft and Belichick and Brady, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit of this Patriots Holy Trinity. And they said, no, there's been some tension. I can assure you that there has to have been at some point. Does that mean that we have to take it to this, like, ridiculous extreme and say, everything's falling apart, they can't stand each other? Let me just give you some factual points that I can have confirmed from a very reliable source who said, yes, Brady and Garoppolo had their issues. They worked through them. that Kraft did not tell Belichick to trade Garoppolo, that Belichick had no intention of moving off from Brady. What he did is made a concerted effort to try to keep Garoppolo, but I've been saying this for 2 years now. If you wanted Garoppolo to stay here, tell me how much money he gets paid in 2018. No one's been able to answer that question for me because the going rate for a quarterback entering his free agency year is $23 million per year. Look up Kirk Cousins. $23 million guaranteed.
Right. Whether they're worth it or not.
Right. Are you going to pay Garoppolo that much to sit on your bench? And people say, well, they could get him for cheaper. Why does Jimmy Garoppolo want to take less money to not play football? He's a competitive guy like anybody. He wants his chance. The only way to have kept Garoppolo would have been to move on from Brady right now.
Yeah, do the Joe Montana.
Exactly.
Trade him off to Kansas City.
Okay, and even that, and I've had that analogy brought up a lot. That doesn't even work because the way Montana lost his job, there's like this revisionist history on this. He was hurt for the entire 1991 season. Mm. He came back late in 1992. By the time he did, his replacement, Steve Young, was the MVP of the league.
What do you do there?
Right, exactly. Now, if Montana played in 1991 and won an MVP, which Brady is about to do, would they have cut him and moved on to Steve Young? Not in a million years. And the idea of, oh, the Packers, you know, moved on to Aaron Rodgers, they were left with no choice because Brett Favre retired for the 15th time. Mm-hmm. And then when he tried to unretire for the 15th time, they were like, sorry, we've already started building around this guy. So it's unprecedented to take a guy playing at Brady's level and say, we feel so good about the backup that we're going to ditch this guy. Sure. Why? Because of the number on his birth certificate?
Well, what about the issues around Alex Guerrero?
Sure.
And the whole TB12 method? And again, folks, I know folks who listen to sports radio, you've heard this, but I want to get it from Jerry. Jerry's a guy who, you know, he bleeds that silver and blue. Those are the colors, right?
Yes, yeah, okay. And there's some red in there, too.
A little bit of red in there, too. But
some white.
But he's the guy who, he understands the Patriots. He writes about the Patriots. He wrote a book about the Patriots. I want to get his perspective on it. Also, being a local guy, Hanover.
Yeah, there you go.
Squires.
And I have no doubt that Belichick reined in Alex Guerrero. That's well documented. But he didn't tell people you can't go to him anymore. He said, all right, he can't be on the sideline.
Within
he
reason,
can't
right.
be on the team charter. He doesn't work for the team. And I think part of that was, all right, other players started going to him. That's fine. This is America. You can go wherever you want. Yep. I think the team received bills from TB12 for these guys' treatment, and they were like, all right, slow your roll here. We have a medical staff.
Right.
We pay them good money. They are highly qualified and highly respected in their business. We're not doing that.
You don't want a built-in redundancy, so to speak.
Right.
Because that's what you get out.
Right. If you want to go to some extra person, that's on you. That's right. Great. No one's saying not to. That's a damn sight different than, I hate this guy. I hate Brady. Brady's a weirdo. New guys come along. They feel like they have to call him sir. Like, it's insane. And this whole idea of a rift between Brady and Belichick, let's go back to when we first started hearing about rifts. Lawyer Malloy gets cut in 2003. Oh, there's a rift. They win two Super Bowls. When they traded Deion Branch, when they traded, when they let Wes Welker go.
Logan Mankins.
The Mona Lisa Vito press conference. What's the cliche on that, Kevin? How has that always been spun? Belichick threw Brady under the bus.
Yes, yeah.
And Brady's furious. Brady has always outwardly and inwardly demonstrated that to him, he's an employee. He has bosses. He subjugates himself for the greater good. These are two guys who are focused on winning. They are going to be here come September when the season kicks off, and I'm going to hold everybody accountable for the nonsense that they've spewed about this is it and that it's all over and right. Belichick is going to go to the Giants or whatever. Not happening, and you're going to have to
especially
eat
with a GM
words.
In place. That doesn't make any sense at all because Belichick is his own GM. Yeah, you got Nick Caserio who's kind of there, but Nick Caserio is just an extension of Bill. Let's talk a little bit while we got a couple of minutes left here. Great game this weekend. No rust. No effects of that right. article. Give me your thoughts. How did Tommy look?
Fantastic. As a matter of fact,
MVP.
The biggest problem he had were drops. I mean, like, you know, James White, who's as reliable as there is, had a few drops. You know, a couple of near misses with Brandon Cooks. Beyond that, third down percentage, if you know, a couple
good.
Of, I think they were like 0 for 3 in the first two drives or something, or 1 for 3. And after that, they want a streak where they're like 11 for their next like 13 attempts on third down. That's phenomenal. He moved well. He got good protection, but he had to move around a lot and buy himself some time, which he did. You continue to see why Belichick would stay here. He wins with the system because he has everything in place to the point where Kyle Van Noy has made himself almost indispensable.
Yeah.
He was so transcendently good. And then you have performances from guys like Adam Butler and Geno Grissom, a guy who's been cut more than a party-sized pan pizza, comes in and plays like 10 snaps and had a sack. The defensive line dominated. Tony Romo said that
Don't even get
WATD FM Marshfield.
I have loved his commentary all this season. It wasn't until this game that he irked me. He became the anti-patriot, the crap about, almost like, oh, we all want to be here to see Brady fail and just all that crap. And it's like, Tony, you never even ascended to the level that Tom was back in 2004, 2003. You never even got that high. You couldn't even hold the kick. It was an extra point that would have tied the game. He pooped his pants.
So what you're saying is that Romo was really good in the regular season and terrible in the playoffs? kind of reflects his career, doesn't it?
It does.
He's as broadcasting what he was as at quarterback.
He was fantastic. I loved his commentary. He was good. He was refreshing. But then when he starts doing the anti stuff, whether it's Jim Nance doing the Jedi mind trick on him to say, all right, you got to make sure you say negative stuff about the Patriots.
Sure. How about the fact that he said, you know, where the Titans have a real shot in this game is they're going to dominate on both sides of the line. Okay. Zero sacks of Brady, 8 sacks of Marcus Mariota, who, by the way, is a running quarterback.
Yep.
You know, maybe Mariota was still upset about Hawaii, about the fake missile. I don't know, which I think the Patriots probably staged just to mess with his head.
Well, just to channel my good friend who stole it from another celebrity, George Kipitan, you just made the list.
Yeah, sorry. I actually stole that from Greg Murphy, who texted it to me. It's a great line. I apologize.
It's actually Chris Jericho from yep, wrestling, yep. But it's still he was just mumbling. But it was good to see the Patriots come away. It ended up being a blowout. Early on, you're like, oh no. It was almost like watching watching the Steelers go down 21-0. Right, I'm like going,
sure. How about Brandon Bolden, who had one carry last year, comes in and has like 4 for a touchdown and like a 20-yard run. I mean, I'll concede.
Next
the blocking
up.
Was so good on that goal line touchdown of his that Stephen Hawking could have run that one in. If they could have activated him, they would have given it to him. Just, you know, here, keep the game ball.
Absolutely.
You've unlocked the secrets of the universe. It's the least we can do for you, Steve.
Well, so we look at this coming weekend.
Yep.
And I hate to say this, but there's stuff on the, you know, stuff looming here. You get the Jaguars, and the Jacksonville Jaguars, a decent team. Yeah, they knocked off Pittsburgh once in the regular season, and they basically thrashed them yesterday.
Right.
Let's not forget that there's a guy who is in the front office who has the blueprint to be able to defeat the Patriots, Tom Coughlin.
As a head coach, and I've made this point before,
Tom Coughlin
is the best big game head coach in football history, college and pro. Because, all right, let's go
loved
back.
Him with BC. Loved him.
Right, 1996, he was with Jacksonville, their second year of existence.
Mm.
They went out to Denver, at Denver, and beat a 15-1 Broncos team. thus helping the Patriots get into the Super Bowl, because they were not going to get past the Broncos. BC, when they beat Notre Dame going for a national title, an undefeated season, and he had other games at BC where went up against a national power and pulled a game plan out of his butt. So, yeah, respect there. There's a lot of good on this Jacksonville team. I don't necessarily feel like the Patriots caught this gigantic break. I mean, they have a running game, that small, elusive kind of runner that's doesn't usually match up with them. They'll usually shut down a Derrick Henry type. You know, what they used to do to Jerome Bettis, like just load up on that kind of guy.
Eight in the box.
Yeah, a Fournette guy will give you a hard time. You know, the corners, Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye, that arguably as good a pair of corners as there are in the league. If they can pressure Brady, rushing fewer than five guys, if they just three and four guys and then drop people into coverage, which traditionally has been the way to beat the Patriots, if you can defeat those one-on-one blocks and still have guys in coverage, meaning not blitz. If you blitz, Brady has chunks of defenses like you in his stool sample. then they have the capability of doing that.
I mean, Blake Bortles is not going to, he's going to poop his pants. He basically almost pooped his pants last week playing Buffalo. Okay.
Yeah, he had
he's got a little scoot to him, but he's not necessarily.
He rushed for more yards than he threw for.
Exactly. How do you do that?
But and they also lost to Tennessee twice this year, so we don't know what we're going to get.
What's even funnier is if you're Mike Tomlin this morning, how do you even look at yourself in the mirror? How do you do it?
You just say, "Well, I've screwed up badly before. Just do what I did before." But he made a series of atrocious decisions. And you know what? Shame on
him. Love that zone defense, too.
Oh, sure. And like going for it on fourth and a foot when you've got a 6'6", 265-pound quarterback and you have him throw it 20 yards upfield. Like, what? Like, what the actual? And then going for the onside's kick. Like, you didn't trust your defense with more than 2 minutes to go and two timeouts to make a stop against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, that's on you. But this is a Steelers team that looked ahead to the Patriots. He said he talked about them in advance. Mike Mitchell talked about the Patriots, and then Le'Veon Bell
tweeted out like,
"We're gonna have a second."
They saw that on your Facebook.
And you know what? That's a leadership.
But they did it before.
Problem.
They did it back 17, 18 years. Did they do that? Were they looked past the Patriots?
Yeah, they
was
hosted
2001.
2004. They hosted the Patriots in the. Actually, you know what? Okay, no, I will say 2001 because that's when they went there. And, you know, Lawyer Malloy, still with the Patriots then, who was always looking for some sign of disrespect, as they're walking into the stadium, sees a storage room filled with all their luggage because they were leaving directly to go to the Super Bowl after the game. And use that as fuel. You remember Willie McGinnis on the sidelines going, "You have to cancel all those reservations. Cancel those reservations." Swinging a terrible towel. It couldn't happen to a nicer franchise.
Love Big Willie on the NFL Network. Jerry Thornton has been our guest. Jerry, we got less than a minute left here. What do you see for this game this weekend? Patriots are they heading to yet another Super Bowl? Are we yet to see the formation of another dynasty before the Patriots lose their coordinators?
It is not a great matchup, but I just think the Patriots ultimately have too much. They're healthy. Reports are today that Rex Burkhead is going to come back.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think they are just such a this Transformers team. And, of course, I mean Autobots, not Decepticons.
No, never.
They're the good guys. But I think that they can just take those first few drives and figure out what an opponent is trying to do to them and then counter it somehow, whether that's, you know, the control passing game. The other day, they were taking away the deep balls, so Brady he targeted Danny Amendola and Deion Lewis 23 times for 20 completions. That's just hitting that underneath stuff and moving the ball that way. So I think the Patriots will figure out what Jacksonville's throwing at them and have an answer. I don't think it's going to be easy. I'm not going to sit here and go blow out City, a bunch of tomato cans. I think they're facing as good an opponent as the AFC has to offer. So I think, you know, just like the beginning of this century, you had them winning 3 and 4 years. I think this one can perfectly mirror that 3 and 4 years. And if they play Philly is who they beat for that third Super Bowl back in the day. So there would be this awesome kind of symmetry with that 2007 season we won't talk about, is like the fulcrum between these two separate dynasties with the same coach and the same quarterback.
There he is, Jerry Thornton. Make sure you check him out on Barstool. Check out, of course, the podcast Laces Out. And check out his website at jerrythornton.net. We're going to step aside. Hour number two of Monday Night Talk right here at 959 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Daddy, Daddy, I used that tea kettle to melt the ice off your windshield. Now there's beautiful and pretty crisscrosses and sparkly spiderwebs all over the windshield.
What?
Can we do Mom's too? Can we?
Oh, windshield broken? My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, welcome back to the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Later on this hour, we will speak with the boys from Mountain Weekend. They'll join us, play a little bit of their, share a little bit of their music with us. But right now, joining us, the first good friend of the show. He's been here on several occasions. See, he's also got us on Facebook Live.
Got you on the Facebook Live.
All the boys and the girls, ladies and gentlemen.
Serious
so a little Facebook
here.
Live. Of course, when you hear it on the podcast, it will no longer be live.
Oh, sorry.
But Bishop Tony Branch is here in studio, and we've had some interesting conversations.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Whether it was about him running for office.
Yep.
Or talking about diversity.
Yeah.
And we're gonna delve into being the good doctor's his birthday
today. That's
holiday.
Right. That's right.
Knowing that we're coming up on the 50-year anniversary
assassination.
His assassination in Memphis. Right. I thought it was important, and of course I have a good friend Kenyatta Savage, who is here. Kenyatta became well known instantaneously
50 because minutes of fame.
Because he got outed for wearing a Los Angeles Dodgers hat to a Red Sox Yankees game. No, that's not why.
That put it over the top.
It was a fantastic picture, though.
Yeah.
He was on the cover of the Boston Globe as the Boston Globe, the Spotlight investigative team, was doing a series in regards to the city of Boston. Where is the city of Boston on the spectrum when it comes to race?
Right.
Racism. Is it because it has been deemed over the years as being probably one of the most racist cities in America, and they delved into it, they looked into it, and it so happens that the seven-part series, there was actually a picture for one of them, and Kenyatta was there, an African-American man,
yep,
who was there wearing a hat in a sea of white faces.
Yes.
And it so happens that they actually did a standalone story.
That's right.
On Kenyatta, because the whole thing was they took the picture. The picture said a lot. It said a lot. They say a picture can say 1,000 words.
That's right.
They might have said more than that. But they also, because you were savvy enough to reach out to them going, hey, that's me.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, let's do a story. If you could, kind of, what was it like to have them, to see your picture on the front page and it to be in regards to an issue like this?
Well, yeah, when I first heard of it, it was a text message at 6:30 on a Sunday morning saying that, hey, I don't mean to wake you up, but you're on the cover of the Boston Globe. And, you know, so then they sent me the picture. Then calls started coming in throughout the day, text messages all day. And I finally said, okay, I have to actually go check this out.
Did you think it was like from one of your shows? Because folks don't know it. But Kenyatta is a talented singer.
Oh, thank you.
Talented,
thank
you. Got the pipes. Were you like going, oh, were they at one of my shows? They see me doing the national anthem.
Right.
Well, I was wondering, no, that wasn't the first thought of my mind, but
I was wondering
what I could possibly, why I would possibly be on the cover of the Globe. And then when I finally saw the picture, I still didn't quite get it.
Yeah.
But I knew where they got the picture from.
Right.
So I was like, wait a minute, that's back in July.
Yeah.
So I started to look a little more into it, went online, and then finally saw that story, and I was like, oh, that's what it's for. Okay, well, I feel this way.
Wow.
So I have no problem with it. Like this.
What was it? Talk to me about reading the series, reading parts of it, kind of ingesting it, what were some of the things that really resonated with you about the Boston Globe series, the Spotlight Team series?
I could definitely relate to a lot of it. As a matter of fact, like
for folks who didn't read the article, who haven't seen the article, talk to us in regards. You're relating to what?
Relating to the state of racial equality within it definitely covered Boston, but I think that was a little more than that. It seemed to hit a little more Massachusetts in general, like New England, but
right.
But Boston was definitely a focus. And after reading the story, I started thinking about things I've been through. As far as being racially profiled by police, having strange things being said to me that, you know, if I say something, it might be, you know, pulling a race card, that kind of thing. Mm. And I was also reminded of things that my mother went through when she was living here too. She went through the same things. Went through the same thing. So it resonated with me.
Your mom, an educated woman?
Yes, definitely. She actually came here to finish college, so yeah. And then, you know, this is back in, late 70s when she was here. So she was around for the busing incidents and everything like that.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Yeah, so yep. She's, once she found out about it, she was also on board. And I don't think I've ever talked to her so much about this subject of race racial experiences, like ever since the story came out, we've talked almost daily about this subject. So,
but that's good. Conversations need to be had, not only within one's own groups, but that's another reason why.
Yeah.
A great reason why I have the bishop here, because we've had this conversation, and you have said, and if I'm not quoting it correctly, if I'm not saying it correctly, that albeit a difficult conversation, somebody has to start it.
Right. I think the struggle is that people of color, but specific, and one of the things that the Spotlight article spoke about is that it really targeted black American, black residents, not necessarily people of color. The problem that we're having is that we've had this conversation, with all due respect, since slavery. we had the conversation when we went to Jim Crow. We've had this conversation during lynching, during Martin Luther King's campaign against this. For those of us that were a little bit more militant, Malcolm X. Prior to that, you know, Garvey. So we've had the conversation. My concern is, especially when I'm talking about this and preaching about it, is that the conversation with my white cousins seems to become difficult. So I need for the family of God to have this conversation, which is not only inclusive of the victims, and even that, when I say that, in some settings, people get pretty upset. Slavery is over with. Yeah, but you all have to understand the vestiges of slavery. You have to understand Jim Crow. You have to understand why there's a need for civil rights. But specific to the city of Boston, I'm going to push back a little bit, because we feel that Boston, and as I grew up and lived in Boston, we kept saying Boston's like this Selma, Alabama, something to that effect. But we also know that as we crisscross the Commonwealth, what we're feeling in terms of racial insensitivity, inequality, that's in a lot of communities in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Again, I think that I need for us to begin a conversation with our white cousins. I want them to come to the table. And I gave you a great example of how I finally sat down with some of my white peers, and I gave them an example of being pulled over by the police, and how people that knew me said, "Bishop, we knew you didn't do anything wrong." But then someone else hearing a conversation would have said, "Well, the police had to be right. You know, there's a lot going on with black people." But they said that that's the problem there. Having a conversation with somebody legit, you having a conversation with a white person, having that conversation with their white counterpart, to bridge the gap is what we need. That what black men and women are complaining about is legitimate. My concern is that people are dismissing it. They're being very dismissive when it comes to inequality. But data doesn't lie, Kevin. You know, we live in, I come from a healthcare administration background in labor relations, and we do stuff that's called evidence-based. Data doesn't lie. So when you look at what the Globe wrote up, especially around the median net income or the median net worth of Black Bostonians is $8, according to the findings of Federal Reserve Review in 2015. That's data. That's real. Why is that happening? That's happening because of the vestiges of redlining neighborhoods, banks not willing to loan money. That's because we were segregated in certain neighborhoods. That's because racism is economic power on top of having the right color. We need to address that. And the reason why we haven't addressed it is because a lot of our counterparts, they don't want to give up power. they're not trying to give something up. People are not trying to give something up. So
is it tough to be? Do you feel that individuals in power feel that it would be tough to be on the other side?
Oh, absolutely.
And that there might be retribution? There might be something called payback?
Yeah, well, I think that, our president recently said our president first said that he's going to come to the table around DACA. You give me an immigration, a complete immigration law,
reform.
And I'm reform, and I'm going to sign it.
Right.
A day later, or a day and a half later, whomever spoke to him, he changed his attitude. And to add more fuel to the fire, he made some inappropriate remarks with respect to my Haitian counterparts, exactly. El Salvadorians, and parts of Africa, specifically Nigeria. It seems that white folks, all due respect, I love you, want to feel comfortable. And because they want to feel comfortable, a lot of them go right back to some of the devastating comments and feelings of their particular base. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
I think that's like, the problem.
Yeah, just the president in general. I mean, we all know this, but I mean, he's fueling a fire that maybe was smoldering at some point. And
correct.
Now it's just more in our faces. And
I want to come back around to that because I definitely do want to touch upon, our 45th president at this particular moment. And again, you are listening to a Monday Night Talk. We actually are probably in about 10 minutes. We're going to open up the phone lines. Folks want to call in and kind of weigh in on this subject. Can feel free to call in, give a question. I mean, we don't ask you a question and then we'll answer the question. Right. If you have a rebuttal to it, fine. But I want to be able to. If there are a number of people who want to call in and answer it. Because sometimes what happens when you do phone calls, one person wants to engage in conversation. That's okay. Right. But we also want to have the conversation here as well. I want to go back to Kenyatta in regards to when people saw you, the picture, and being a part of this series. What was the kind of the response? What was the response that you got from folks?
Well, yeah, at first it was, I went to work the next day. Some people actually saw it, and they were like, hey, wait a minute. I thought I saw you. I was like, yep, that's me. Then I did tell a few people, and at first, I didn't tell them why.
Right, that's, yeah.
Which
yeah.
is key here.
Exactly.
I wanted to make sure. I did this on purpose.
Right.
So I showed them the picture. They're like, oh, this is great. You're on the Globe. Oh, wow, this is wonderful. You're famous. And then I told them why. And their expressions immediately went from a big smile to like,
how did you feel?
I kind of expected it. I expected that because I know that...
Again,
that
it's a difficult topic.
That is a difficult topic. Right. It is. It's a very difficult topic. I don't think it should be. Pretty simple.
Right.
But
right.
It is a very difficult... It makes people feel uncomfortable.
Mm.
So, some of my white friends were asking me if I felt...
Did you answer
Are you
honestly?
Okay with this? Are you mad?
Right.
And I was like, no. Why would I be mad? This is how I feel. This is life for me sometimes.
Right.
You know.
And a part of the beginning of the conversation when I talk about diversity and inclusiveness, and I go in a room, I start the conversation, and what comes up immediately, you're calling me a racist.
Right.
And that's the problem.
And
people think that they're going to be labeled.
Yes. Well, to that point is I don't. This is just my what I find is they get it, my white friends, some of them, they get uncomfortable with it, but I don't think they should because I'm okay with them.
Right, right.
Like they shouldn't feel like they're being racist or anything, but I don't know if I don't understand it. I really don't.
I'm flustered, actually, when I think about it.
We sit here on Martin Luther King Jr.'s, you know, his day, his
That's
birthday.
It.
How have things changed in 50 years? Have they changed? Have we made any progress in 50 years when it comes to civil rights and equality?
Do you mind if I
go for it?
Jump on that. This is Kenyatta Savage,
yes.
And we have Bishop Tony Branch here on Monday Night Talk. Please, Kenyatta.
I think there has been progress.
Is it a dance? Is it two steps forward?
How about this? I think there's progress in the sense that, let's just put it this way. I can walk through Marshfield.
There you go.
Without getting stopped.
Yes. There you go.
That's
South Boston
how, yes.
Too.
Exactly.
South Boston
I can walk through South Boston
That's right.
without getting beat up.
Okay. As long as you don't move a space saver, you're all
exactly.
set.
Exactly. Like that's how I think it's changed. However,
I'm going to get deeper about it.
That's why you're here.
We can.
That's why I brought you in.
There has been, on a more intimate level, we are outright dating each other, loving each other, having children. We are browning America, and people think it's browning America by way of immigration. I'm pushing back on that. Mm. I think it's browning of America by the way of the acceptance of the rainbow, the acceptance of the diversity, because we're dating each other's, we're dating across, and I hate the word race, but we're dating across race, we're dating across culture. So I think
ethnic lines.
So I think that there is progress. My concern with America, my concern with the Commonwealth is that when I wrote my notes, a lot of this change has to come by way of legal efforts versus the normalization through processes of private businesses and government. Everybody needs to be sued to change.
Yeah.
Where's the moral compass?
There's also, there's also still a perspective that's still out there that, for instance, if I walk into any place and I open my mouth, people are surprised at how I speak.
Speak
because,
you talk white.
Yeah, exactly.
You talk white.
Exactly. So there's still
some
things there that we need to get through. But
so I'm going to ask one more question, and then we'll take calls at 781-837-4900. We'll take calls, but I got one more question, and that's in regards to we were kind of going it that way with our current president, where, you know, with the individual who is in office right now and with the recent incidents that have happened. Some people will say that didn't happen. Others will say, others were there and said it did happen.
Right.
And has been deemed from being sworn in a racist. And folks have been fearful as to some of the actions and repercussions that would happen with him being president. And you look on social media and see some of the things that happen. I mean, if somebody is a supporter of our president, they're automatically put into that corner because they support this individual politically, and a lot of people feel that his ideals are also that of theirs too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Can we separate the two? Or can we not?
Well, Donald Trump, 45, hasn't separated them. There should be no expectation. I'm gonna go back to the actual campaigning. I knew that something was something was amiss when a black woman got kicked out of the campaign, punched in the face, and pushed. And that was right before he said these words, "Get them all out of here." My concern is now that he's president, he has a megaphone to carry on this message, and he did it when he talked about Nigeria. He did it when he talked about... So for people of color or black people, we're not surprised about Brother Donald.
Not at all. Not at all.
He was like this in New York.
Yes, he was like this long before.
This is what our concern is. Who in the heck or why? Why aren't my white cousins coming out and saying that although we may support his economic changes that he wants to make, we want to support some of the taxations he wants to change, but you're not able. Mitch McConnell has not come out and said anything regarding this racist remark.
And the little boy,
the Speaker of the House, with the little boy face, with
Ryan?
The big eyes. Yeah, Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan, yes.
He is so weak. I don't know. That's what concerns me as an American. Not the president, but those that are on the opposite side, those that are legislators that are not saying anything.
Who are enabling
my friends, like you said, my friends that so happens to be white, if you're not saying anything, I have some concerns. That's my concern. I'm not concerned about 45.
All right. I believe, do we have a phone call? Oh. I think we have a call on the line. Your name, caller.
My name is Alex.
Alex. And, Alex, where are you from?
I'm from Abington, and just full disclosure, I do know everybody in the studios tonight, but I do have a question. I know Kenyatta, obviously, more than I know the bishop,
you do.
But I know them both really well. But and I know a little bit of his background, that he came here from California, went to school in Scituate, and then ended up living in Hull. Yep. And my question is, since 45 has been in office, well, first of all, what was it like? And this is something we've never discussed. What was it like going to school in Scituate where, you know, let's be honest, there weren't a lot of people of color in Scituate at the time, nor in Hull when you moved to Hull.
Right. Well,
what was it like then? And then a two-part question. Do you
Hold on. Give the man a chance. Let him answer the first one.
Ask the question and hang up and let him answer it.
Okay, so
All right, the first one was... No. He's right. He's going to... He'll ask you questions, and he's going to hang up and let you answer. Thank you, Alex.
Great.
And do you see, with what's going on in Washington, a bigger wedge now than it was, you know, a few years ago? Because my opinion was that things were starting to get a little bit better a few years ago. And now it seems to me that any progress we've made in the last 8 to 10 years is slowly becoming ripped apart again.
Okay.
For lack of other words. So I'll nice talking to all of you. I'll hang up. And
thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Okay.
Thank
we'll
you,
be
Alex.
Talking to you soon.
All right, so if you will.
So the first question, how was it, what was it like to move to Scituate?
To live in Scituate.
I moved to Scituate to finish high school.
Wow.
And from Los Angeles. And I'll put it to you this way. There was a call that I got from the gracious family that let me stay with them. They're like family to me. They're the Frasers. Maybe they're listening, but the Frasers love that family.
Amen.
But I was on the phone with the father, and he said this, and I will never forget it. He said, when you get here, they won't know what to do with you.
Oh, wow.
And I knew exactly what he was talking about, because, again, I'm a black man that doesn't fit the black stereotype. Right. That's the only way I can put it.
You didn't come with a hoodie.
Exactly. I wear hoodies, but, you know, the...
you might have predated hoodies.
Right. No. There were hoodies back then.
But they weren't called hoodies.
No, they weren't called hoodies.
No, they weren't.
It was a hooded sweatshirt.
That's right. Thank you. They were.
It's after a handful of bank robberies in the past 10 years that they called hoodies.
That's right.
So...
But please...
I had fun with it. I went in with an attitude where it's like, these people don't know what to do with me. I've seen more than they have, so whatever comes. That being said, I have had, when I first got here, there were a bunch of different little hearsay things about, like, little racisms, like people calling me the N-word, or people coming back to me saying, oh, this person called you the N-word, so...
What you gonna do about it?
Exactly. Right. And it was like, absolutely nothing.
Right.
Because...
Right.
I'm not going down that road. I got to finish high school. This is what I'm here to do. I'm not here to get involved in any of that mess. I got to, so that's
and
how
and
I
people don't it. Understand what it's like to be, to, when someone comes at someone, you know, in a racial way, name calling.
Right.
It's, it, you know, and it's, people don't realize how hurtful it is.
Right.
And you sit and you go, what do I do? What have I done wrong? Why can I not? Why won't they accept me?
Exactly.
And that's
exactly. You know what, too? At that point in time, I think I'd been through 3 years of that in high school anyway. I think all kids go through that in some way, shape, or form. Right. But my particular one was I had been to...
Yeah, but you were... But here's the thing. I'll bet you anything, and I'm just going to throw this out
there. Go ahead.
Now, when did you move to Scituate? In high school?
92.
No, but you were in high school, junior high, or...?
No, senior. Yeah. I was going my face senior year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll bet anything that if you were somebody who was there in grade school, it may have been lessened a bit.
Right.
Because you...
I would have had more time to...
You, yes.
To assimilate.
Assimilate, exactly, yes.
Yeah.
For lack of a better phrase.
No,
it's
true. Right.
I'm being honest. No. No, absolutely.
That's, you know what I mean? But not to say that you would be totally omitted from such nonsense from such people.
Right.
But I have to ask the deeper question. Mm-hmm. Did you do prom? Did you date?
Ooh.
That's the hot button issue.
Yeah, that wasn't sure where to go with all that.
781-837-4900. If you, again, want to ask a question in regards to the topic that we have here.
Shoot.
In regards to the Spotlight Investigative Teams.
Yeah.
Seven-part series on racism, Boston. And, of course, this is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I thought it was an appropriate conversation because I was talking with... Yeah. I reached out to Kenyatta. And I'm like, I know him.
Yes.
And I saw it as a great conversation start. The conversation needs to be started. Yeah. Maybe there are people at home shaking their head going, no.
We don't want to hear it.
I'm sure there started. Is.
That's all, I'm cool with that. Yeah. I'm cool with that.
Actually, you know what?
But it's on them.
I don't mind. If I could have a discussion with someone, then yeah, I'd have to leave.
781-837-4900. If somebody wants to chime in, whether it's somebody who's paying attention to...
Call in.
Yeah, call in.
What are you all doing at home?
Are you even hooked onto the wireless here?
I bet hope you, so. Yeah, I hope people...
I'm seeing it move, so somebody's making comments. Surprised you haven't said anything in regards to any of the comments. People are usually more brave on social media make their comments. Yeah.
Right.
That is correct.
I'm not loving on
call
anybody.
Call in.
781-837-4900, because we just got a couple of moments left here before we wrap this. And I thank both of you. And we'll keep the conversation going.
We definitely need to.
Thank you for having me.
Listen, Kevin, but we thank you. We thank 95.9 for allowing us to have this conversation, because it's important. It needs to get out there. It doesn't have to be as scary as people are making it when you have a discussion about race. But people have to understand, please, that find what we're saying to be credible. I think that a large portion of the conversation, especially around law enforcement, so many people push back on, no, they're good. When 99.9% of police officers are fine. Mm. It's just that 1%. You know, Boston recently, within the last year, had a fairly new Boston cop still on probation who did some inappropriate racial stuff. A brand new cop. So things are still happening. That's why it's very important that we have conversations around inclusiveness and diversity.
And if I can, just a quick moment. Passing of Tracy Harrington Barbas, of course, daughter of former Brockton Mayor Jimmy Harrington.
Yes.
Passing a first sergeant, female sergeant in the Brockton Police Department. Our thoughts and prayers go out to their family. Do we have a call, Larry? No call. Okay. Anything you want to say in closing, gentlemen, as far as moving forward with the conversation? You mentioned as far as it being something that, you know, we have to do legally. Why not, using another L word, why can't we, we're the leaders.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that has been the tradition.
I'm saying, though, go beyond tradition. We're the leaders of across the spectrum.
We have a very good example. Kevin, we have a very good example. When the professor at Harvard, when he got arrested by that Cambridge police officer, and Barack Obama brought the professor, the cop, and the president. They had that three-way conversation over beer. This is what we need to begin to do. We need to have some serious conversation that people are not going to feel threatened that someone is trying to take power. We're not trying to take power. We are looking for equality and equity. That meaning, if you have the masters and I have the masters, that you still do not believe that I'm lesser as a man, that I'm worthless. Same thing in terms of our women. Gender. Yeah. Exactly. Gender. That people are less.
Time's
we
up.
Have to have the conversation.
Time's up. And we watched the Golden Globes.
That's it.
I was wearing black that night.
Were you? And did somebody
black
actually,
T-shirt. My favorite black T-shirt.
I don't know who wore. Did someone wore another dress?
Oh, another color.
Yeah, another color. And she really got slammed on Twitter.
But you know what? It should be a choice.
Right.
It should be a choice. If somebody, There's also, you know what though? Again, you can't go to Walgreens and buy a box of Common Sense. And some people aren't always blessed with common sense.
Right.
And that could be the case. Not that I'm making any excuses for that. Those individuals who did not at least embrace the change and the message in the room that evening. So, Gentlemen, I want to thank you both. And I want to thank the folks who are watching on Facebook Live.
Thank
Tony's
you.
Facebook Live. I don't even know if I'm in it. I'll have to wait.
You are. You're pitching. I'm looking at you. Look at you.
And thanks to the production guy.
Larry Nelson.
The production guy. Who's listening to all of us.
Ben. Larry. Is that your name, Larry? Yes.
Larry Nelson.
Thank you, Larry.
Larry's the best.
Amen.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to step aside. And when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 959 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 959 WATD. Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to the final segment of Monday Night Talk, and those tunes that you're hearing, the tune that you are hearing in the background is of the band, the group Mountain Weekend, and we are privileged to have three of the five members here. We have Dave Brown, Dave O'Neill, Scott Bradley. Of course, there are also two Mikes who are in the band, Mike Enos and Mike McKenna, who make up this five-member acoustic rock band, or acoustic root rock band. And here in studio, we'll start to have a bit of a conversation. Final segment, we'll start with Mr. Dave O'Neill. A little get-to-know-you, so folks know who you are, learn about your music and some of the gigs that you get up and coming. Dave, if you will, start. You get to be first.
Thank you. My name is Dave O'Neill, and I'm the drummer. I play harmonica, and I sing a little bit as well. I've been playing in rock bands for about 30 years now, and, you know, it's great to be working with these guys because this is the first country roots bluegrass band with a banjo and a mandolin that I've ever played in.
Really? It's the first for you, Dave?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, you kind of got like a rockabilly look to you as well.
I played in rockabilly bands, you know, heavy metal bands, hard rock bands. So, you know, this, I had to kind of change my style a little bit, you know, modify it to fit what we do. So it's been a challenge a little bit, but it's been great.
And then, of course, we have Mr. Scott Bradley. Scott, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Kevin, hey, thanks for having us.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, like Dave, I've been playing probably since I was 8 years old and played in numerous bands over the years. And I think this project is just, you know, it's been great for us. The great group of guys, we're writing some great songs and we're having a lot of fun.
And, of course, we have Mr. Dave Brown, the other Dave. Dave?
The other Dave.
The other Dave. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I play guitar and mandolin, a little bit of bass, do some singing as well. So, yeah, I've been playing for a while as well. So we're kind of the elder statesmen of the group. it's been great. And I've been in the roots genre myself for a long time. So I really enjoy the country rock way of doing things.
Okay. Tell us, how did the group form and where did the name come from?
Well, the two members that aren't here today, Mike McKenna and Mike Enos, started playing guitar together. They didn't even know how to play guitar prior to 2012 or so. They picked up two guitars and they decided that that was what they really wanted to do. So they started writing songs and playing guitar together. The Mountain Weekend name kind of grew out of that. They frequent a small town up in Vermont and often spend mountain weekends up there in the Vermont hills. So the name kind of grew out of that, and that's where they do a lot of their songwriting as well. So so those guys kind of formed the core. I soon joined them. It was the three of us plus their brother for a while, and then Scott and Dave joined a couple years later.
Scott and Dave, the other Dave, kind of gave me an instance as to how you guys met, if you will. Scott, tell the story.
Yeah, so I liked these guys, the three of them, Dave and Mike, I go see them frequently. And it ended up that Dave O'Neill and I were in a different band, just the two of us. It was like a twosome, drums and guitar and singing. And anyway, so by chance, we had a gig together at a venue. It was the Bean and Brew Fest in Middleborough one year. And we opened for them, or they opened for us. I forget how it happened, but our drum set was set up and my guitar amp was set up. And they said, hey, sit in. So I sat in and I called Dave over and I said, Dave, why don't you sit in on the drums too? And like those guys kept looking back at us and going, wow, this sounds really great. Like we were all astonished how it came together just like that. Like we didn't even plan it and boom.
Would you concur?
Yes, absolutely. I remember playing, just sitting in and jamming with them, and I went to, it was a Brew and Bean Fest, and so I went to get a burger, and they, you know, the grills were way, way down from where the stage was, and I came back, and they're all kind of looking at me, and I said, oh, what did I do this time, you know? The drummers usually, you know, kind of get that look every once in a while, I guess, along with all the drummer jokes, you know, I get those occasionally. But, you know, they said, you know, do you want to kind of join forces? You want to try to make a band out of this? I thought it was a great idea, so I instantly, you know, agreed, and so here we are.
If I could go around the table and ask your influences, because, you know, maybe that could tie our listeners into when they listen to your product. We're going to play one of your songs in just a couple of moments here, but here are your influences throughout the years, some of the things that you may be listening to, which you might have in your iTunes account or you might have on your computer at home. We'll start with Scott.
Well, I'd say I probably cut my teeth on the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And being a guitar player, I always loved Jeff Beck, and Eddie Van Halen was a little bit of an influence, but that doesn't really cut into what we're doing now too much. There's a band right now, the Mallet Brothers, the Avett Brothers. I've been listening to a lot of them, and also Lucero, and there's a couple others that really make up my what I'm listening to now, anyway.
And would the statement be true if somebody that never trusts somebody who doesn't like the Beatles?
I'd
asking
agree.
Scott that. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Safe to say.
Absolutely.
Safe to say.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. We have a consensus here. Dave O'Neill.
Well, I started playing around 10, and my original drum heroes were actually the swing drummers of the 30s and the 40s.
Nice.
So my father had, you know, Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich, Louis Belson, Papa Joe Jones. My father had, you know, a swing collection. He was an active listener, so he would be telling me while we were listening what the musicians were doing, the drummers were doing, and all that. But much to his chagrin, the allure of rock and roll was right around the corner. And so John Bonham of Led Zeppelin and Ringo and Charlie Watts and John Densmore and Keith Moon, and the list goes on and on and on. And that's pretty much still what I listen to today. You know, I like the Americana sound.
Yep. I was going to say, is there any new stuff that you like these days that catches your ear? Or,
I can't think of anything right now. Not to say that there's nothing good out there. It's just I've really, you know, if you take the body of music that's been recorded between 1930 and, say, 1970, I haven't even scratched the surface yet on that. I'm always finding something new in that music.
Okay.
So that's where I'm at.
Mr. Brown. Your influences, some of the stuff you like listening to.
Well, lately, quite a bit. I always like to listen to the newer stuff that's out there just to see what's on the horizon. But Scott mentioned the Avett Brothers. That's a huge influence for me. I jumped onto their bandwagon very early in their career. So about round 04, started listening to them. Going back a little bit, I really enjoy the, I love Pink Floyd. It's one of my biggest influences, I would think. I think that pops up in our band a little bit, as well as some of the 70s singer-songwriters, Fogelberg, James Taylor, and so forth. That sort of works its way into me as well.
All right. Now, I know that you guys have been in the studio, and you also have some upcoming gigs that we're going to discuss in a bit. And we actually have something kind of queued up here. I believe it's The Drive. Is that right? Who wants to kind of give us the details on The Drive?
Yeah, Drive is a tune written by Mr. Mike Enos. He's not able to be here today, but really, I think one of our best original songs. Real happy with how it's turned out. It's just a great road tune. Shuffles along. Yeah, it's one of our best.
All right, so we're going to play Drive by Mountain Weekend. You're hearing it here on Monday Night Talk on 959 WATD. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. That is Drive by Mountain Weekend. They're in studio here. Guys, what's the recording process been like working together for the first time?
Well, luckily enough, we have a studio in our practice space that's nicely set up and got some pretty decent equipment. And so we've been able to poke away at it in our spare time as opposed to going into a studio and trying to cut everything out all at once, you know what I mean? Which can be stressful. I've done it.
Right. Dave O'Neill, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, we interviewed a couple of prospective producers, engineers, and, you know, like Scott said, we would be on a real tight schedule to do that. You may block out a weekend or something like that. So, you know, we started working on it in increments, and it actually has been working out well. Scott's been doing a great job engineering and handling the technical side of it on the other side of the glass. And, you know, so we've been kind of our own boss, working at our own pace. And so you got a little audio sample of what we have so far. We have yet to mix and master and everything. But
so that's raw. Raw rated in the studio. Raw. And it's the first radio airplay, too.
Yes.
That's a little notch on my belt. I'm sorry. I get a little full of myself for a second there. Mr. Brown, if you will.
Yeah, it's and it really helps in terms of cost and everything. I mean, all of us are working guys, so it's nice to be able to just kind of do this at our own pace. And I think it comes through with a real relaxed feel, and there's nothing uptight about these recordings at all. You know,
it's a great clean sound. A little country twang in there,
for sure.
Just a little bit, but it's got that 70s. I'm a 70. I love the 70s. Love, love, love. 60s and 70s. That's kind of my wheelhouse. I like some of the new stuff. I like the Foo Fighters, stuff like that. But I feel like a lot of the stuff these days is a little bit more homogenized. And, you know, you get hits or misses here and there. But that's a great sound, especially coming from a local product. I think you guys are originating out of Middleborough, so to speak. Yeah?
Yeah.
Middleborough.
We base out of Middleborough. Most everybody lives in Middleborough, and Mr. O'Neill lives in Whitman.
Whitman.
At that point, I'd like to give a shout out to Buddy's Pizza Pub, where we play often. It's kind of like our home base, and Buddy is a great local music supporter. Every Friday and Saturday night, he has local guys in there, and it's a good place for anybody to check out.
And where's it located? Come on, tell me where it's located.
It's right on Route 28 at the Middleborough Rotary.
All right,
I guess that would be.
East
Grove Street.
In case any of our listeners here in the Pembroke, Marshfield area, Duxbury, might want to take a trip over to Buddy's.
It's a great spot.
We should probably also give, you're going to be even closer than Middleborough coming up. Give some of your gigs that are coming up, please.
Well, Saturday the 20th, which is next Saturday. This coming Saturday. Yep. We're playing at the Mayflower Brewery for their 10th anniversary party, which is open to the public, and it's going to be a great time. That's from 12 to 3, and then that night we're playing at New World Tavern, which is downtown Plymouth, from 9 to midnight with a band that's opening for us, the Barn Burners, who are really great. And then Dave, there's a couple more coming up, aren't there?
Yeah, we're playing at Shoveltown Brewery in Easton. That's going to be February 3rd. We're playing between 7 and 9 o'clock. And then we're going up into Vermont later on in February for a couple gigs. And then on St. Patrick's Day, we're going to be playing at Buddy's, which we just mentioned.
All right. Now you can do any harvesting of maple syrup while you're up in Vermont or not?
Well, I don't know if we'll harvest any, but we'll probably
sample some.
Yeah.
Okay. If folks want to find out more about the band, about you guys, other than here in this great interview, how can they do this? Social media, website?
Yeah, we're on Facebook. So look for Mountain Weekend. Sometimes if you put together Mountain Weekend Band, that'll send you right to us in a search.
Okay.
But also check out our website, mountainweekend.com. That's MTNWKND.com.
And for those teachers out there, there's no vowels in the website. So except for the com part.
Yes,
of it.
Exactly.
Anything in closing, gentlemen, other than we've got a song to send folks out for the program. Anything you want to say that you haven't had a chance to say?
Well, we should have the new album that we're working on, which we're going to press on vinyl and also have for digital download. It's going to be in the spring. We're hoping, May, June. We're going to do some crowdsourcing on that also. So if anyone wanted to get in on that early, there'll be some options for that if they go to our website.
Dave O'Neill?
Drawing a blank. No. Just come down to the gig.
That's right. As you're walking out the door, it'll come, you go, I should have said.
Absolutely. Story of my life.
Happens to me all the time.
You know, come down to the gig on the 20th, either or, and there are people coming out. You know, the more the merrier.
Yes.
You'll enjoy yourself. Thank you.
Mr. Dave Brown.
I just want to say thanks for having us, Kevin. We really appreciate it. Appreciate your support of local music. And hope we can talk again sometime.
Absolutely. And I think the plan is I'd like to get you on Almost Famous. I said this to you guys before. I met somebody Scott and Dave O'Neill, friends of mine from another great friend of ours who has since passed, Paul Hutchinson or Hutch. The show that we have on Tuesdays is a great show, and they support local artists. And we're going to try to get you on that program with Johnny Shea.
Right, sounds good. Yeah, we'll make sure we bring Mike and Mike with us that time.
Yeah, there'll be no excuses for the two Mikes. None.
None.
I think they're skiing right now.
It's all right, but I look forward to meeting them eventually. If somebody will, we're going to be playing The Lot, the final song. Give us a little bit of a description to take us out of here.
Yeah, this is a song written by Mike McKenna, who's kind of our the leader of the band, and one of his best songs. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for here on Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.